The Monologue.
Absurd and yet expected news coming out of the Biden administration. We now learn that the National School Boards Association, when they were dealing with the White House early on in their claims that the school boards across the country, because they're dealing with parents who are actually pushing back against their horrific and dangerous policies, that they're all domestic terrorists, which was a basic position of the White House. We now learn that the National School Boards Association was calling for the deployment of the Army National Guard and the military police to monitor various school board meetings. This, according to an early draft that the organization's independent review released over the weekend. This, according to Fox News. They write, in contrast to the final version, the draft of the NSBA letter said, quote, "We ask that the Army National Guard and its military police be deployed to certain school districts and related events where students and school personnel have been subject to acts and threats of violence." That is, of course, lunacy, absolute lunacy. And while, yeah, there were some small instances of low-level violence breaking out, there's no doubt about that. There was never any coordinated issue. There was never any widespread issue. There was never any significant threat that required police, let alone the Army National Guard or the military police. That is absurd. That is absolutely absurd. But it does tell you how this administration and the activists that it enables view the parents. The National School Boards Association, so deeply entwined in their own ideology, their fringe ideology. Because remember, at the time, this was all a pushback against CRT in the classroom, which originally they told us didn't actually exist, wasn't happening. That's only something that's taught in graduate level courses. Then they said, well, okay, it doesn't exist like CRT, but you just don't want the truth about history being taught. So they switched up their argument. And all that parents were doing were going to school board meetings saying, hey, I want you to stop teaching kids that people are good or evil based on their skin color, which is an odd position for us to have to take in 2021 when this was such a big deal. It still is a big deal, by the way. That's all that they did. Did they get passionate? Yeah. Did they say your jobs are on the line? Yeah. Now, I understand why teachers and school boards wouldn't want any sort of pressure coming from the parents. I understand that position because they are trying to usurp the role of the parent, the responsibilities of the parent, the teaching of principles and morals that generally the parent is supposed to instill in their kids. They want to replace parents at these schools. Teachers want to replace the parents who don't have the quote-unquote right kind of position. School boards are in that exact same scenario where they want to be able to do whatever they want with your kids. They'll put whatever idea that they want in their heads because the whole goal here is to create activists who, once they get out of school, they end up graduating and passing policy that really institutionalize their viewpoints, not just on CRT, on race, but on gender identity. This is all tied together. All of it is tied. We've made the point before, I think it bears repeating, that it's much more difficult for you as an adult who's listening. I'm presuming most of you are adults, although hello to the, you know, the talk radio nerds like I was at 13. Hi. So it's much harder to convince a 47-year-old or a 52-year-old or a 63-year-old that gender is fluid, that white supremacy permeates every aspect of this culture, especially the older you are, the more you understand how that's a nonsense point. It's much harder to convince you because you've already got your worldview set. You can be moved in certain directions, but for the most part, most adults are set on their worldview, their general worldview. But when it comes to kids who haven't created a worldview yet because they don't have any experience in the real world, they are framed, their thinking is framed by the teachers. And when they're on the same talking point or talking points on every issue, year after year after year after year, and there's no pushback from parents getting in their ears saying, that's not right, don't believe that, little Johnny. Well, it makes it very easy to convince those kids to hold that view, which then they take into adulthood when they have power, when they become doctors and lawyers and CEOs and politicians, then they're able to push all that garbage on society. And that's how you make societal change that's long-lasting. You can't just argue your way into it. You have to get buy-in, and they are indoctrinating these kids from an early age. So, of course, they're pushing back. I will say at least the Biden administration didn't fall into this trap. They just decided to call all those parents domestic terrorists.
The interview.
The baby formula shortage is still a very serious problem, despite the fact that we did, in fact, get some shipments finally from overseas to help some of the problems across the country. But obviously, we have to figure out how we can get baby formula onto the shelves much more quickly. And why are we in this mess to begin with? Joining me on the line is Matt Larkin. He is running for Congress in Washington's 8th. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jason.
Kim Schreier, who's a doctor, in case you didn't realize that. She, of course, is the congresswoman that you're hoping to unseat. She has been making the rounds this morning on MSNBC. She made a point that there's a lot of blame to go around, including with the FDA and the Biden administration. Do you think that that is a good faith criticism from her, or is this politicking?
I think it's politicking. I think the irony is that she should be making the rounds questioning herself. Why was she so slow in responding to this? I think she didn't feel comfortable coming out and talking about this problem until Nancy Pelosi did. And that's because, frankly, she votes with Pelosi 100% of the time. So Nancy Pelosi is her cover on this. So the second Nancy starts talking about it, she feels safe to talk about it. So it's very political. It's all about politics. And I think this was kind of a virtue signal thing that she can do. It's kind of safe ground for her. I think it's disingenuous in some senses.
What would you have had her do? Just speak out earlier about this? Or are you suggesting that Congress could have done something?
Well, I think as a pediatrician, I'm not sure you know that, Jason, but she is.
She's a pediatrician?
Yeah.
Oh, I did. Yeah. You're right. Thank you. The more
I know,
you learn.
I know. She never talks about it, so I'm not surprised you didn't know that. But she has a huge platform. She should have been front and center talking about this issue, holding the Biden administration to account and seeing this train coming down the tracks a long time ago. We knew the potential for this problem back in September, and it got exacerbated in February. As a member of Congress, she should have been much more proactive, especially given her dual role as a doctor and a mother on this issue.
Do you think she might get some extra points because of that with voters? I do think that there are still obviously stereotypes when it comes to, you know, who you give credit towards and who you maybe dismiss on certain issues, a man versus a woman, a mom versus a dad.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, maybe. But I think voters will see through this, too. They'll see that she's never met a government program she didn't like and that she's voted consistently to grow the size of the federal government and the bureaucracy that led to a lot of these problems, as opposed to me, which is a stark contrast, a father of four young kids. My kids are 12 and under. My baby just turned four a couple weeks ago. So we're right in the fight for this stuff. Thankfully, we're out of formula, but not by too many years here. Mm-hmm. We're out of the formula stage of our parenthood. But we have a lot of dogs in the hunt here. So this is a personal issue to us. And frankly, Jason, I'm out talking to people. I'm out listening to people. I don't stop in this campaign. I had a mother crying to me 2 days ago, just sobbing, saying that she feels like she can't provide as a mother for her child, and she was genuinely scared. So Kim's not out there listening to people. She's entrenched in D.C., and I'm on the ground hearing from people, talking to people, frankly, hugging moms who are struggling with this problem. So there's an element there that I think she's out of touch.
Matt Larkin joining me on the line. He's running for Congress in Washington's 8th Congressional District. His website is larkin4congress.com, Larkin, the number 4, congress.com. At the same time, another crisis that the Biden administration and Democrats are responsible for and are not really engaged in any sort of fix on is the gas surge. gas is through the roof here in Washington State. We just hit another historic high. We keep setting new historic highs for the average price of gas. It's up another 11 cents, I believe, since last week. In this particular district of Washington's 8th, I mean, it is a large district. I spent some time in it over the weekend in Leavenworth. I mean, it is bad.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I filled up my tank in the 8th last week in Sammamish. It was $5.39 a gallon for regular. That's crazy. And to merge it with this baby shortage issue, mm-hmm. parents are having to drive all over the place just to track down the last container of formula. And that costs a fortune now with gas prices being that high. So it's a double prong hit to parents and to families right now who cannot afford the Biden economy. And this is outrageous. And guess what? Kim Schreier is supporting the Biden agenda 100% of the time. In fact, you probably saw that picture from a few weeks ago of her holding his hand while he was out here visiting. A lot of us were scratching our heads saying, what is going on? Why won't she stand up to him? Why does she keep voting for this this madness?
Well, in fairness, he's frail. He might have needed a little bit of assistance in walking around. In fairness to both of them.
That's a really good point. I should have taken that into consideration.
Matt Larkin is running for Congress. His website, Larkin4Congress.com. Larkin4Congress.com. Matt, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jason. Happy to be here.
Now this.
The interview.
Well, a group of activists, communities getting together, neighbors getting together to push back against sort of a laissez-faire approach to crime in Tacoma has certainly gotten the attention of a lot of folks, but have they seen results yet? Joining me on the line is Angela Connolly, co-founder of Tacoma Safe. Angela, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thank you.
Have things gotten any better from your perspective? Obviously, we keep seeing increases in violent crime. Have you seen any positive results?
Things are on their way. I would say that crime continues to escalate. But I do think that what has changed and the impact that the community really answers, I think that there's a greater solidarity and organization that has happened. What's interesting is the original Tacoma Safe, which grassroots citizens from every area of Tacoma, it has had such success and has had such an impact in our area that it has now become a countywide. So it is now actually fully supported and it was requested by the Pierce County Council to become a countywide organization.
Have you gotten the impression from the county that they are taking your concern seriously?
Yes. Yes. We actually absolutely feel their support and including meeting with them, collaborating. And I think, too, it's beyond that. It's also a strong relationship has developed with Chief Avery Moore. So you've got a coming together of not only citizens, but you've got leadership and you have the police, and all of them are coming together. So there's like, it's such a blossoming sort of entity, which was not there before. Before, everything was in silos. So do I see it? Hope? Yes. If you talk to Chief Avery, he speaks into this very well. Mm-hmm. His goals are to develop connection and trust. And so Tacoma Safe is partnering in that with their organizing community meetings with him. And so it's actually all of these entities working together like they have not before. But does crime still exist? Yes. And is it escalating? I think it's still escalating.
Yeah, I mean, it very clearly is, according to the data. Last question for you. How long, reasonably speaking, do you expect it'll take before you start to see some of the results on the ground?
So I think that what's absolutely going to be essential is that it continues to grow, that the citizens speak out more, that the leaders work together across the aisle more, mm-hmm. that that the police have more officers, and that actually we just do not accept any sort of status quo until there's a functioning society. So here's what is the path forward. For Tacoma Safe, the leadership has broadened. Their new, brand new president has just come into place, Brett Johnson, and he is taking the expansion of Tacoma Safe to be countywide. Here's the other thing. The cities have all been silos. The cities are recreating the wheel. We have to have more countywide solutions because you just don't clear one area and then have it pop up down the street. So as far as when is it all going to be safe, not until everyone starts acting like they care and get the energy to speak out and also to not I really think everyone has to work together. There's I just want to share a couple things, like Ann Artman, who heads up the Tacoma Recovery Cafe. She and the Tacoma Recovery Cafe are hosting a community meeting with Tacoma Safe in Hilltop, and that's coming up on June 13th at 6 p.m. Chief Avery is hosting a barbecue community building event on June 6th. And that's from 11 to 2, and that's at the Goodfellas Barbershop. So these are building relationships. It's interesting because it's kind of the same reason why I just wrote this book, because it's called The Crowded Table. We actually need to see that we all belong to one table. And everyone, you know, we have to not allow behaviors that mm-hmm. hurt other people. Businesses need to be safe. Citizens need to be safe. We need to act as one team, one family.
Well, there you go. Hopefully that happens sooner rather than later. We've been talking with Angela Connolly, co-founder of Tacoma Safe. Angela, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz has followed that in detail. He's a radio host in Seattle. He broke this story. He joins us now.
Never shy of his opinion. Jason definitely letting you know how he feels about that.
Wow. You laid that down.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
The filing deadline has come and gone. We now know who's running for various positions across the state. Former state senator Mark Melosha is running for Secretary of State. He will be challenging a Republican who's also in the race. Mark joins me now. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jason, for having me. Good to be on.
So I think, obviously, you know, one of the storylines here is that there is another Republican lawmaker who is running. State Senator Keith Wagner made the announcement that he's also running. He made that announcement a couple months ago, at least. Why did you decide to jump in?
Well, I think this year the voters are looking for a passionate, bold leader who's going to actually fight for the voters, make sure we have the best election system in the nation, and that we have somebody who's really knowledgeable. I served 18 years on the committee, the election committee, when I served in Olympia. And as you, of course, you know, my background is all about audits and quality management. Mm-hmm. But we don't have anybody with my experience who can work with both Democrats, Republicans, and independents who will make sure election integrity is done and done right in Washington State. Well, I am that person.
And you used to be a Democrat, so you've got bipartisan blood in you.
Yes, and I literally know what the Democrats want, and I know what the Republicans want. And I think I could be the one that could bring folks together, mm-hmm. and also independents and the voters and the average citizen involved to make sure we have an election system that is fair, that is balanced, and that the data shows is working, and there is nothing wrong with it. So I am that person. So that's why I jumped in.
Do you view our system right now as broken?
Well, this is what I told somebody. In fact, I said this when I was chair of the committee 5 years ago. We have so many holes in our election system right now. Virtually anybody with a little bit of organization can cheat or manipulate or put their thumbs on the scales. And it's unconscionable that the elected officials in our state and across the nation have allowed this perception, these holes, to trigger this great distrust of the entire democratic process. And so we need somebody in there who will actually fix those mistakes, close those holes, close those loopholes, and not have these wild, distrust happen all across the it's in both communities. Both Democrats and Republicans are unhappy with the way the election system is working right now. You saw that. Democrats are screaming about how Trump stole the election. Yeah. Now Republicans are screaming Biden stole the election. Why don't we get together and fix this once and for all?
Well, and there's perception versus reality at play here as well. I mean, Georgia example, that their voter suppression law actually led to a surge of voting. So, you know, the Washington Post comes out at the time that they passed the law, Republicans are trying to suppress the vote, and now they've got a story about how there's a surge in voting, which obviously conflicts with their position. But it is a reality versus perception. And for some, the perception is that Washington State doesn't merely have some holes that need to be addressed. And you're obviously right. We've talked with Kim Wyman about some of the loopholes that should be addressed, versus the reality as to whether or not those loopholes are, in fact, being taken advantage of. Is there evidence of any substantial campaign that is, in fact, trying to cheat the system? Or is it we've got a perception problem that's based in some reality of it could be abused, and we just got to address that?
We have to address that. There's no doubt that there's a lot of unanswered questions, and none of the elected officials are getting in front of this runaway train. When there are too many loopholes and the data isn't clear, you know, trust but verify. Of course, Ronald Reagan said that. Integrity, and that's why I'm a big believer in audits. Audits prove integrity. Audits prove trust. If you have the data and people are involved in the counting and the validating of every single ballot, that every person who votes legally should vote, then I think that perception or those loopholes will get closed, mm-hmm. and we'll get back to working together versus fighting each other, these never-ending battles about who won or who lost the election or whether there's fraud or not.
Mark, what is an example of one of the loopholes that's pretty glaring, just so we can get specific?
Okay, real specific. Right now, there's almost virtually no evidence about that ballot is really signed by that person or that person is a legitimate legal voter. Another one would be just that we have to move to that, make sure that the chain of custody from when that ballot arrives is correct, even when it's counted, that there are observers in the room watching to make sure there is no skullduggery. Same thing with having machines hooked up to the internet. Mm-hmm. It's been very clear about that there is ample opportunity. There's been no proof offered, obviously, but ample opportunity that you can change ballots if you're hooked up electronically. So all these different issues, we need to make sure that both Republicans and Democrats solve them so that the proof is uncontroversial. The proof is there that this system is secure. We don't do that right now.
Mark Belosha joining me on the line, former state senator who is now throwing his hat in the ring to be the next Secretary of State. You would be replacing Secretary Hobbs, who was appointed to this position, the first Democrat to hold this position, and it had to be appointed in decades. This after Kim Wyman decided to take a job in campaign or, excuse me, security around elections, cybersecurity around elections with the Biden administration. What was your view on Secretary Wyman's tenure? She obviously held it for a while and she kept getting reelected.
I worked with Secretary Wyman on a number of issues. You know, she expanded, worked with Democrats a lot to expand access to voting, which is okay. That's just a good thing to do. But I wish she had gotten in front of this problem with audits. I very much encourage her to do some real-time audits of the system when we're actually counting the votes. That's what I wish she had spent some time doing this, and we would avoid this perception or these question marks about our current state. It needs a little money. Somebody needs to fight for the budget money to make sure that we have that accountability and integrity system in place before we actually start counting the votes.
Where do you expect that money to come from? Just because, you know, we obviously hear from Democrats who say voter integrity matters, that we've got to make sure we get out the vote, particularly in communities that are disproportionately underrepresented, blah, 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 all those talking points. Yet at the same time, they have a tendency to not spend money on some of the important issues and instead spend the money on some of the issues that are ideologically driven that really won't help people in the state at all.
Well, I was there when the Democrats spent between $50 and $100 million for the free postage, mm-hmm. and you could sign up virtually anywhere, the drop boxes, on and on and on about getting improving access, but not one dime to make sure we're counting the votes properly. That is secure. Not one dime. That's where we have to put money into. And if you do that, the county auditors will then be spending much of their time actually making sure, because it is a local problem. All the counties have to are the ones who do the actual counting. But if we give the county auditors the money to do the job right, to do the audits, to make sure it's secure, to bring the both Democrats and Republican volunteers into as election observers, if we do all those things, and it takes a little bit of money, then we'll end this problem that both parties seem to make accusations depending on who wins. That's got to stop.
Should we remain a mail-in voting state only?
Right now, it's too popular right now. I guess the first step right now is secure the system. Can we make our system secure right now?
Okay, but long term, should we transition to a hybrid? I've been pretty consistent on this. I like the mail-in voting. I find it to be convenient. I don't have any significant trust issues on my side, but obviously there are plenty of Republicans in particular who do call it out as potentially unsafe. Some flat out say that it's easy to manipulate. So do you just long-term support a hybrid model of if you want to vote in person day of, you can do that. If you don't, you can mail it in like normal.
Well, I hope within 2 years of me being Secretary of State, I can prove to everybody that the mail-in ballot is secure. If I can't prove it, then we have to go back to the old system.
There you go.
But we have to have that proof up front, incontrovertible proof that the system is trustworthy and it is working.
Fair enough. Mark Melosha, running for Secretary of State here in Washington. Thank you so much for stopping by, as always. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. God bless you.
Now this.
The Jason Rant Show.
Let's bring in our man in the Pacific Northwest, KTTH, Seattle talk radio host Jason Rantz. Great to have you with us to tell people a little bit more about this.
Jason Rantz is in focus now.
Jason Rantz, thank you for your reporting on that.
The Quick Hit.
Now, normally I wouldn't have to fact check a story that got its sort of legs from both Zero Hedge as well as InfoWars, and yet I have been seeing this story spread all weekend, and it's headed into the Davos convention or meeting that's happening, and it is about the CEO of Pfizer. He made some comments that have been taken to mean you are going to be tracked with these ingestible pills, ingestible medication that is able to explain, hey, I have just been consumed. It's a little pill that includes some sort of safe to ingest technology that can explain to whomever that, yes, this pill was actually taken. So here's the comments from Albert Bourla.
It is basically biological chip that it is in the tablet. And once you take the tablet and dissolves into your stomach, sends a signal that you took the tablet. So imagine the applications of that, compliance, the insurance companies to know that the medicines that patients should take, they do take them. It is fascinating what happens in this field.
Now, for some reason, this video is suddenly spreading, and it was promoted by Jeremy Lofredo, who is with Rebel News. And he just tweeted, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla explains Pfizer's new tech to Davos crowd, quote, ingestible pills, end quote, a pill with a tiny chip that send a wireless signal to relevant authorities when the pharmaceutical has been digested. Imagine the compliance, he says. So Jeremy is lying here. He didn't say anything in that clip about reporting it to the, quote, authorities. Now, I know that Jeremy puts in relevant authorities because when he gets called out, I'm sure he would say, well, I'm talking about doctors. No, the clear implication is that we're talking about sending this to the government. Now, what he doesn't post in this clip is that these comments were made back in 2018. That clip I just played for you, the clip that shows up in Jeremy Lofredo's story, then made its way to Zero Hedge, which at least in Zero Hedge's point, they say flashback and they note that this is from 2018. But he doesn't include that this took place in 2018. It makes it sound like it's happening right now or within the last few days, which is so incredibly, incredibly disingenuous. It's incredibly disingenuous. And you can look at some of the comments that have been left on his Twitter feed, because this clip has been retweeted over 20,000 times, has been, quote, retweeted over 13,000 times, and it got over 32,000 likes. And a lot of the people who are retweeting it obviously think, because that was the intent, they're obviously thinking that this is somehow tied to, you know, some of the COVID concerns, that the government is overreaching in its authority, which is a valid point, because I do think that the government is overreaching with its authority. But this has nothing whatsoever to do with COVID. It's not new. And there's no context in which you can listen to this. And I, by the way, I went back and I listened to the whole comments, about a minute and 12 seconds long, comes after a question was asked from the audience. There's no reason to believe that this has anything to do with the authorities, with the police, with the government. Now, you can take your concerns about digestible medication or digestible tech tracking medication and say, hey, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, we weren't really thinking about the prospects of living in a world that is mandating the vaccine, or living in a world that is asking for vaccine paperwork in order to, you know, travel, in order to use a restaurant. Like, I think that that's fair. And I think that that's worthy of discussion. I really do. But the people who are taking this, people saying, this is the new face of evil. It was never about your health. I'm just looking at random text message or tweets. If you were wondering what kind of person read 1984 and he got excited about the possibilities, he's running Pfizer. This is not true. It is a, and it's funny because another one, it is not a conspiracy theory. The transnational elites want control over you. They admit their schemes openly. Now, it's certainly a possibility that some people want to have that control over you. Again, I think that that is a valid concern to raise. But stop using a clip from 2018 that is not at all related to COVID and was taken dramatically out of context. The pill that they're talking about, or that they were talking about at the time, was a pill for schizophrenics. One who, I believe it might have also been used for people who were with bipolar disorder, because this is a drug that was approved, at least with the technological aspect to it, back in 2017. And we would, if you're a doctor, or if you're a family member of someone who's living with schizophrenia and gets bad when they're off their medication, you would want to be able to track their medication use. Compliance, which is what he meant there. Medication compliance, meaning is the patient complying with your ask that he or she take that medication once a day or twice a day, whatever it happens to be. Now, obviously, that happens with consent. You shouldn't be forced into this kind of scheme, and I mean that in a non-nefarious way, without your consent, because it involves tracking. But can't you see the real-world applications of something like that? I can. I think most reasonable people can. And again, if you disagree with that, that's okay. Have that conversation. Just don't use old sound bites, presenting them or implying that they're new, which I think by omission, this guy from Rebel News does. And again, I look at all of the folks, including a congressman, who decided to just retweet this and claim that this was relevant right now because it was a comment that was made right now. That is, of course, lunacy. And that is a conspiracy theory. There could be nuggets of truth in it. In the conspiracy, which, by the way, there are nuggets of truth in many conspiracy theories, nuggets of truth that get exploited to push the conspiracy, sometimes for political gain, sometimes for financial gain, sometimes because you're just not really caring. You're just doing it for personal gain, meaning you'll get more likes, more retweets, more friend requests. Don't fall for that.
The Last Rants.
Which is why, and again, you know, I'll give you this message maybe once every quarter or so, remember to fact check everything. Fact check absolutely everything. Anything I say on the show, fact check it. Get in that habit. Because then you're going to find out real quickly which outlets you can trust, which outlets are taking advantage of you, which outlets are not telling you the full story. And the worst that can happen in fact-checking these stories, whether it's what might be a conspiracy theory or what is being presented as just, here's the hard news. The worst thing that can happen is you become more informed on that story. That's the worst that can happen. And that sounds like a good outcome. Now, do you have time realistically to fact-check everything? No. But the stuff that you get passionate about, that you get angry about, that you get concerned about, why don't you start there? If you saw this clip on Twitter and you were concerned about being tracked by the government via Big Pharma, again, I understand that concern. But if that was something that was alarming to you, and it should be, right? That idea should be alarming. Fact check it. Fact check it. It took me maybe 3.5 minutes to look that up because I was like, why isn't anyone talking about this? Why is it only that InfoWars is talking about it? Not even Fox is covering this. Well, that's so odd. Well, because it's not real. It's a fake story. Or it has a nugget of truth because it's not like it was a deep fake video. He made the comments. There was more context that, again, when you get a 26-second clip, which is how long this clip was, also a little bit of a red flag. Just fact check it. And then you become more alert to the folks in the media on both sides of the aisle who might take advantage of you. And that's the Last Rants.